Investigators in New Mexico have revealed their initial findings into a deadly movie set shooting that involved actor Alec Baldwin. Baldwin fired a prop gun during rehearsal for the movie Rust last week, killing cinematographer Helena Hutchins. The director was also hurt in the shooting. The sheriff's department said during a press conference today, two people handled the gun before it was given to Baldwin. The sheriff also said there were three guns in the vicinity of where the shooting happened. All of them are being tested by the FBI. Witnesses say the weapon fired as Baldwin was practicing drawing the gun from a holster. During today's press conference, the sheriff spoke about the use of real weapons on set.
I think the industry has had a record recently of being safe. I think there was some complacency on this set, and I think there are some safety issues that need to be addressed by the industry and possibly by the state of New Mexico, but I'll leave that up to the industry and the state to determine what those need to be.
The shooting is prompting calls to better regulate firearms on sets. Others are pushing to replace them altogether with computer-generated imagery.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
I am Lisa Zambetti. I was the casting director for CBS's Criminal Minds, where I was very proud to work with executive producers like Harry Bring and Ian Wolfe and many, many people who kept our set so safe for 15 years, despite all of the shootouts and the explosions and
the fires
and the plane crashes and all of the chaos on that set. And I asked Jim to jump on with me because I wanted to talk about this tragic accident that took the life of Helena Hutchins, who was a cinematographer working on the set of a movie called Rust in New Mexico, where she was rehearsing a scene with Alec Baldwin and her director, Joel Souza. And she was shot by the actor who had been handed a weapon that was supposed to be safe. And to talk about this with us, Jim, I really thought it was important because I had an interview earlier with our VFX guy, Stephen Myers from Criminal Minds, right, who actually made the guns go boom, except they didn't really go boom. He made them look like they went boom. But I wanted to bring on somebody who knows a lot about tactical weaponry on set, who's worked with armorers. And so we have with us today...
Hey guys, John Barden. I'm an independent weapons expert and professional military consultant for film and TV. And I too, a long time ago, worked on Criminal Minds.
That's right.
Well, all roads lead back.
Thank you so much for coming in today. And it is a very sad occasion that brings us here. Sad for both Helena and for Alec Baldwin, who's the actor who actually pulled the trigger.
Didn't pull the trigger. That's what I want to ask.
Right. Could not have pulled the trigger too. Absolutely.
And then also for just productions in general, because this will obviously make people a lot more hinky about doing scenes with weapons, and it will change. And it's already changed on some sets policies about how and what kind of weapons will be used. So why don't we dive right in? And Jonathan, can you tell us a little bit about your career in terms of consulting and working on TV shows and movies?
I was 12 years in the United States Marine Corps, multiple combat deployments. I'm a certified weapons expert, not because I say so, but because the federal government pumped a ton of money into me to make me one. I'm also a licensed range safety officer at all Marine Corps bases between the East Coast and the West Coast, so Camp Pendleton, Camp Geiger, although probably my range card has expired by now. My job within the military was to supervise and enact training procedures that involve live fire weapons exercises between groups of people between 2 and 2,000. So I have lots of experience in utilizing, you know, real world scenarios with real live weaponry. Yeah. And I got into the film industry and all of a sudden that changes, right? So then we're doing these same kinds of things, but with blanks. And it took a little bit to get used to because I'm so safety oriented already coming from the live fire world. And so I started getting into TV a lot. I started with JAG, NCIS, made it over to Criminal Minds. And I've done a handful of features since then, including One of my favorite movies was just Punisher Warzone. And we had something like 300,000 blanks a month we were shooting on that project. Wow. Without a single safety incident. So you're 100% right. There are safety concerns on with weapons on movies and TV shows constantly. If you have the right people involved that are in the right headspace, I mean, they're safe. It is completely safe as long as the right people are there.
And the thing about this is that this accident was 100% avoidable. She was failed. She was failed by so many people who were there to protect her. It is literally their job to protect not only her, but everybody else on the set. And it's inexcusable, in my opinion, but the facts are still coming out, right? We're still learning so many things. And I wanted to, and Jim, John and I were talking earlier that there are so many things in the press that don't make any sense to me. And they're using all kinds of terms and interchangeably. And there's just so many questions I had when I first heard about this.
Well, there's a lot of finger pointing going on in the press. And, you know, yesterday I read an article saying that, well, because Alec Baldwin was a producer on the show, he's ultimately responsible for the death. Okay. Well, I don't know.
That's ridiculous.
I don't know who hired.
Let's break that down. A producer, the producer title can mean a fucking million things, right? So he could, he could be called a producer just because he developed the script, right? He could be
a producer because they wanted to use his name to attach to the project early on so that they could sell the project.
Right, which he would probably do for a lot less money, but get the producer credit. But I think in this case, he did. He developed the script with the director. But that's a totally different department. That's not who hires the armorer. That's not who vets the crew. Who does that? Can you explain, Jim and John, on who would do that? Is it the line producer? Who is it?
Well, ultimately, between features and television, let's say take television, for example, since it's all of our forte, your line producer would be in charge of the hiring and firing of the majority of your crew positions, especially your department heads outside of it, whether or not they're a producer and executive producer. You know, for example, almost every TV show I've ever worked on, the armorer is directly hireable and fireable by the line producer and or their immediate supervisor.
The line producer is basically the person in charge of the budget, right?
Right. They're in charge and responsible for the application and distribution of the budget. Absolutely. And their immediate boss, obviously being the showrunner, the EP. So ultimately, an armorer comes on because, and just so we're clear, the difference between me and an armorer, I'm not a licensed armorer, but I am a licensed weapon expert. The armorer is responsible for the overall weapons, firing blanks used on a motion picture television show. So if it's a weapon that can shoot a blank, it has to come from a Class 3 licensed armorer. If it's a replica gun or a rubber or anything that doesn't or can't ever shoot anything, that can fall under the purview of the prop department. So prop department can use non-guns, replicas, anything that visual effects might turn into something that looks great on screen. The minute you get into blank firing, you have to have a licensed armorer. I come in to interface between the armorer, the cast, the main cast, and I report directly to either the executive producer, line producer, studio, or this celebrity that's hired me to be there as their safety consultant right off the bat. So I'm just an extra layer of security to make sure that no matter what, there is no weirdness that's going to happen. And that doesn't mean I double check what armors do. It simply means I'm another layer. Just like the first AD is going to be your ultimate layer for safety on a set. My argument has always been, if a first AD is in charge of safety and we're shooting a bunch of blanks that day, they're not considered a weapons expert. So how do know if a gun is hot or cold? Something else we need to remember, the term live ammunition. A live ammunition is not a blank. A blank is a blank. They're full load, quarter load, three-quarter load, full load. Live ammo refers to an actual live bullet in a casing with powder and cap that can go and out of a real gun and shoot somebody. Blank firing guns cannot shoot real ammo. They have an internal blank firing adapter that's welded inside the barrel of the gun. If you try to shoot a real bullet out of a live ammo out of a gun, let's say an M4, for example, you'd have a catastrophic failure of the weapon system.
It would blow up, right?
It would blow up. It would come backward. Pieces would go everywhere. It still creates an unsafe environment, but there's really no place for that bullet to go other than launching the remnants and pieces of the blank firing adapter that's welded inside the barrel. Has it happened before? No. As far as I have never heard of an instance where a real bullet has been brought to a movie set and put in a blank firing gun and used.
Yeah. So let's go back just 1 second, because this term prop gun, I see this in the media. The actor was using a prop gun. We don't know if it was, so when you say prop gun, it could be a real weapon that fires real bullets, and in on set, it's going to be loaded with blanks. So it's a real gun, or it's a real gun that has been decommissioned, right? It's been altered in some way. So it really, it can't fire anymore, but it looks real, especially if they're shooting a Western, it looks real, or it's a fully fake gun. It has never been designed right to really fire. It's just like, there's no way that it could ever fire anything. And I'm not clear. Are you guys clear? What was the actual weapon in this case?
Well, according to the reports today, there were crew members shooting live fire weapons, real guns, real bullets out of real guns at Cannes.
Wow.
On Thinking. That morning. Yeah. Before this incident happened. And to me,
that's ridiculous.
The implication is that one of those guns, one or more of those weapons, found their way into the what you just called prop gun area. And at least one of those weapons apparently was loaded with a real.
But this is a question. This is a huge question. Well, we don't know if people were taking the quote unquote prop guns and using them for plinking. We don't know if somebody else is going to, we just don't know the chain.
They should be weapons that are incapable of firing a real bullet. A prop gun should never be an actual fireable firearm.
You're so right. I mean, let's break this down even more succinctly. We are making fantasy. We don't need real guns anywhere near a movie set. There's no point to have them. And I have actually been on lower budget projects and had to have created a shitstorm because a crew member brought a gun because they had a concealed carry permit and actually walked their live gun they use for protection on a movie set. And I've had to have them escorted off. You cannot have a real gun when you're making fantasies. And so therefore, we have fake guns, we have replica guns, and we have blank firing bolt guns, right? There's only one problem with that. This is a Western. And the minute I heard that it was an older type project that was probably a period piece, I started thinking about revolvers. The problem with a revolver is that you can go home and have a 44 Magnum and bring it onto a movie set with the armor. That gun will fire real bullets or blanks. Right? There's no internal blank firing adapter for it. It uses an open-fronted blank that cycles in the cylinder and will shoot a big flame out. That's why we use them. But that gun isn't modified like an M4 would be, right? With that internal blank firing adapter welded inside the barrel.
Why? Why is that?
So the mechanics behind it, an M4 is a gas operated system, right? So if a real bullet's used in, let's say in the military, the bullet exits the barrel, pressure behind the bullet cycles the bolt carrier group, chambers the next round out of the magazine. Okay, when you take a blank, you interrupt that system. You have to put a pin dot blank firing adapter inside because you still have to have the gas pressure to push the bolt carrier group to the rear and cycle the next round. But you need to see flame and all the cool effects come out the front too without the bullet. So you leave a little pin dot inside the firing adapter, have enough gas to send to pressure the system. You see the visual effect and everyone's happy. You don't have a gas operated system inside a revolver or a shotgun. They're mechanically operated. And so when you pull the trigger on a revolver in double action, the cylinder turns and will shoot the blank. It doesn't need black.
It doesn't need it. But why can't you still have something welded into the barrel so that nothing comes out?
You absolutely can. The problem when you deal with revolvers is a lot of times, especially with 4K and 8K filmmaking, you want to see the front of the weapon a lot of times in stunt sequence, which still baffles my mind. You need to see fake rounds inside the cylinder that don't look like blanks. And you need to see, they want to see down the barrel. If you put something in there, the barrel's too short to hide under the shadow. You will see a blockage within that gun. You'll know it's a fake gun. And there are ways this is dealt with. You don't aim it at people. You don't do stupid shit, like play around with it on set. I mean, so when the minute I heard there was a revolver being used in this, I got scared. Because in Brandon Lee's accident that happened almost 25 years, that's what happened. It was a revolver accident where a dummy round had been stripped off of the casing of a bullet, and the next round behind it was a blank, and it propelled the bullet with the same velocity as a regular bullet would, and it entered Brandon Lee and killed him.
Stop there for a second. Can you say that again? What happened? Because I thought he fired a blank and just the gases.
Nope.
No, I thought there was a fragment of a real bullet that had been used previously that was, I'm saying this in total layman's terms, the gun had been used with real ammunition and a particle of it was still in the gun. And so the blank projectiled that and killed him.
So let's go back to what we talked about. Okay.
Rolled their eyes at me.
It's okay. This is what we talk about, right? So in the film business, we have dummy rounds, which are a real looking bullet, right? They have a casing, dented primer, because you don't need an undented primer, a bullet head, and the armor fills the casing with sand. That way, as a dummy round, it looks like a real bullet, but if you shake it, you can hear the sand inside of it, so you know it's fake.
I just want to break this down for our listeners a little bit more. So what we call a bullet is a casing which holds the gunpowder. And then at the top of it is the projectile. And that the casing is kind of crimped around that to hold it in place. And inside the bottom of the casing is a little firing mechanism. And when the
primer, right?
And when the trigger hits the back of it, or the firing mechanism hits the back of it, it dents it in, causes that to explode, and that burns the powder, which releases all this gas, which pushes the projectile down the barrel. Right?
Yes, so at terminal velocity.
There you go. And in the case of a dummy round, there's no primer. There is sand instead of gunpowder.
Correct.
But there is an actual bullet.
Yes.
A projectile on the end of that that's crimped into that round.
That's correct.
Make it look like a real live round.
That's correct. And a lot of times, that's why when I see in the news, they talk about we discovered live ammunition. I say the jury's out on that because the investigators may not understand the difference between dummy rounds on set. And I'm not saying that they're, like I said, there should never be live ammunition on a movie set, period. No one should be playing around with guns. It's a violation of every OSHA law, every contract producer signed with locations, and so on. But if there was and there's live ammo, that'll be investigated. And then there'll probably be criminal charges against that. But if the investigators found a box of dummy bullets, that makes sense because when you're dealing with revolvers, you put dummy bullets inside the cylinder. So when the camera looks at the front of the weapon, you see brass around the cylinder heads because otherwise they'd look like empty holes and you would know that the gun's unloaded. So dummy rounds, then you cut. And in theory, if you're going to shoot that gun or that gun becomes a live gun or you have a backup gun for that, that gun becomes hot with the blanks. Dummy rounds go away.
So tell me about Brandon Lee then. So you had a dummy round followed by a blank round?
You had, yes. So in the course
of there, where did the projectile come from?
The way they were shooting, they did a huge stunt sequence. And it's actually the scene that takes, well, unless you've seen the movie recently, it's hard to remember what scene it was. But it was a big stunt sequence, right? And the revolver belonged to the lead bad guy. It was his signature weapon. They'd used it for a bunch of insert shots where in during the stunt sequence, they wanted to, the camera was pointed, you know, down the barrel looking at the actor. They could see the bullets. They put in dummy rounds. The gun didn't shoot. Of course not. There's no point to have it shoot. It was just for inserts. Through the course of the stunt sequences, that one of the dummy rounds over time wound up getting loose out of its casing because they're not crimped in really hard. I mean, this isn't like you're making a real bullet. So eventually that strips off the casing. It's a cylinder that you pull the trigger. The cylinder will turn. After weeks or months of that and these stunt sequences, one of those heads stripped off and lodged itself into the barrel. That would have been no problem if you had never put blanks inside that same gun. You know, as long as that gun was never going to be used as a live weapon, you'd have been fine. But instead, that gun got blanks were put in the back. There was a real bullet head wedged inside the barrel. It didn't come out when you tipped it. It wouldn't come out when you changed them. When you switched from dummies to blanks. And the next blank that cycled was hit, and all the explosive potential sent that round into Brandon Lee.
Okay, so the bullet, which is a lead or copper-coated round, that's the actual bullet. That's what people get hit with when they get shot, okay? That was lodged in the barrel. Now, people may not know this, but the bullet is actually slightly larger than the barrel. The barrel has lands and grooves. It's circular, right? Tubular. And then parts of it stick out a little bit and parts of it are in a little bit. And that actually, that's rifled. It's actually turning. So as it's spiraled as it's going down the barrel so that the bullet can actually spin. And that's what helps it fly straight. So in this case, there's a bullet lodged in there. It won't fall out or fall back in because it's actually slightly bigger than the barrel itself. And that's by design. That's how it's supposed to be because it kind of melts as it goes in, right, under that pressure. And so just coincidentally,
yes,
this was stuck in the barrel and a blank round, which didn't have a bullet. It's just a casing, which is crimped down on itself with no bullet in it. There may be some wadding and so forth.
Yeah, some wax or some paper wadding, sure.
Yes, but it has the gunpowder. Not as much as would normally be in a bullet, but it has enough, obviously, to propel this out. And that's how Brandon Lee was killed. That's so horrible.
It's horrible.
Now, just so you know, in the FBI, when we train with firearms, every time we clear a weapon, we actually put our finger between the cylinder and the end of the barrel. So you look down the barrel and you have to be able to see your thumb to make sure there isn't any obstruction like a bullet there.
Yes, that's right. So, and same in the military.
So in the case of this show of Rust, we don't know, because the media keeps saying live round,
right.
But we don't really know if that means a live dummy, you know, a live blank, or a real bullet, because on Criminal Mindset, if somebody were to say to me, oh, this gun has a live round in it, I would never in a million years think they meant a real bullet. I would be like, oh, it's full of blanks. It is still dangerous.
Yes.
That gun is live because it's loaded with whatever it does, still has gunpowder in it. But I would never in a million years think that meant real ammunition. So when I see the media saying this, like, I don't know if anybody really knows what anybody's talking about.
But like I said, as was reported today, apparently crew members were using live bullets, actual ammunition that can kill. They were using them in guns on the set, shooting cans before filming that day.
Right.
And that's very distressing.
That'd be disgusting. Absolutely disgusting.
Yeah. So the other thing I want to ask you about is, when I heard this accident, the first thing, Jim, I thought of is they were rehearsing. I honestly thought for sure that this was a accident in rehearsal.
Why?
Something told me that it was, because, and I felt like it's possible that, and it's true, it's, this is what Alec Baldwin was saying, is that he was practicing a draw, like removing his, you know, from the holster, and he wasn't aiming at anybody and shooting. He was just practicing that quick draw. And I think it's totally possible that this weapon discharged with, he's not pulling the trigger, but it discharged while doing that, because other guns earlier in the week, apparently that had happened, just picking up the gun made it discharge.
How's that? Well, I don't know. I mean, unless it's a double action and he's pulling back the hammer, it's very difficult. I mean, usually, all right, so revolvers can be single action or double action, right?
That's correct.
So on double action means when you pull the trigger back, the first half of pulling the trigger back brings the hammer out of the frame, and then it gets past a point, and then it trips back, and it goes forward. Explain what a single action revolver would be.
A single action doesn't require the trigger to operate the hammer. The hammer can actually be, it's not on a stop, so you can actually pull the hammer back and turn the cylinder and shoot rounds with the trigger not even involved in the process. Mm. Now,
dangerous.
Extremely dangerous, which is why that design was phased out after the early 1900s. So it's not really something we use. I think Browning still holds a patent on it. It's used for some stuff. I would never want a single action gun used on a show before. But here's the problem. When we deal with these guns, if the armor isn't spot on, some of these guns sit in inventory for decades, never get used. We don't know what state of repair this weapon was in. We don't know if it was brand new, if it was 60 years old, 80 years old. We don't know what aging was done to it to make it look like a period weapon from the 1900s, early 1900s. We have no idea the condition of that weapon. I have been on shows where the armor has pulled out older guns and been like, don't anybody touch this under any circumstances except for me or John, because the blanks inside of this, when we load it, we have to load it on set before it's handed to the actor, because it's got a hair trigger or it's a temperamental firing pin, or any number of reasons why older guns are bad.
So that's what I was thinking, Jim. And I was also thinking that it was a rehearsal, because if they were shooting all, you know, the plexiglass over, because they're going to protect that camera for fuck sure.
Yeah.
They're not going to protect the people around it, but there would be that plexiglass in front of the camera. The director would have been in Video Village. He wouldn't have been right over her shoulder. You know, the other actor might have been on the set. I don't know. It felt to me like this was just a rehearsal, and that's why maybe the AD was lax. He should not have been like, okay, here's the gun. I don't know. It just felt like it was done in rehearsal.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, just because it was the cinematographer and the director, I thought they were actually looking at the shot and going filming and standing behind the camera. And that's why they got shot.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out.
Yeah. I mean, the investigators, I'm sure, will be thorough. There's something else to consider as well. You know, I spoke about with Brandon Lee, the fact that the dummy round gets stripped off and then the bank fires. Okay. When you deal with revolvers or shotguns and this fat, anything could get lodged in the barrel. There could have been gravel. We don't know what sequence that weapon, whether it was dirty, whether it had been used in second unit stuff earlier on. So let's pretend that no real bullet got put into the gun. The blank is still capable of discharging anything out of the barrel as a deadly projectile. And if it were just a blank and nothing came out of the barrel, look, we always tell actors blanks can kill, and there's instances where they can't. But if I'm shooting a revolver at camera and I'm 5-10 feet away, the explosive potential of the powder inside that blank isn't enough to kill anybody at that distance, right? It'll burn you. It might mess you up a little bit. I've been shot point blank in the face with blanks before. Thank God I have my glasses on. But the inherent danger is mitigated at distance, especially with a revolver. That's the design is to just put a bunch of flame out and make it look pretty. So it leads me to believe that something got lodged in that barrel and was used as a projectile.
Ugh. Yeah, or a real bullet was used.
Yeah. Well, we'll know when we have unfortunately, when the autopsy comes back, you'll know, right, Jim? They'll know what.
Oh, I'm sure the autopsy has come back. I mean, I'm sure they know right now. I mean, they're just not publicizing it. One thing, though, that we don't know is whether whatever projectile came out went through the cinematographer and into the director, or whether it had, you know, fragmented and just splintered off and a more lethal portion of it went into the cinematographer and a smaller portion or in a less lethal area struck the director. So there's a lot of things we don't know. But what we do know is that if you're doing your job properly, you should clear the barrels of every weapon before you load it and unload it every time and never leave ammunition of any type, whether it's a dummy round or a blank round. You should never leave it in a weapon. And you should always account for, obviously, any of the lead projectiles or the copper projectiles that would be in a dummy round situation. So there's some lack of proper maintenance at the very least, but it could be something much more negligent, I suppose.
Yeah. I am appalled at the lack of chain of custody that's come out in the news about this project. The first AD has no business handing an actor a live weapon or what we call a hot gun on set. That has to either come from the armor or somebody like me who's helping the actor with the choreography in that sequence. Only the armorer should know that gun. Only the armorer locks that gun away. Only the armorer cleans that gun. Only the armorer loads the blanks. Only the armorer sends that gun to the actor. First AD has no business doing that. So because of the chain of custody was broken of that weapon, we don't know anything about how that weapon was loaded, unloaded, whether it was empty or the barrel was filled with debris. We have known nothing, and neither did the first AD, which scares the hell out of me, ultimately. But I want to say one other thing. After the Brendan Lee accident, there was an industry-wide protocol that was enacted where armors and prop masters of using real or set-safe weapons, replicas, or blank-firing weapons, everyone was taught the same thing. It's mandatory that you have an LED on you, and it's mandatory that between takes, you shine the LED through the barrel or cylinder and shine it on your hand on the other side. The idea was always that we knew this accident happened because of this, this, and this. So to prevent against that, the gun barrels are checked in between every single time the weapon's fired, period.
Smart.
And because of that, we've saved this incident from happening yet again. This only happened to Brandon Lee, as tragic as that was. Up until now, it's never occurred again. So for me, it's just appalling as a safety guy to say, well, who didn't check down the damn barrel of the gun? Yeah. Like, at what point did the chain of custody fail us?
And just because it's a rehearsal doesn't mean that you...
Doesn't mean anything.
Slack on the safety.
We know at the very least that there were blank rounds.
Yes. We know that for sure.
It could be that there were live full rounds with a bullet in that gun. It could be.
Yeah.
So it's either somebody didn't check down the barrel or a real bullet with a real projectile and real gunpowder in it and a primer was loaded into that gun.
So, that'd be horrible.
Yeah, it is. It's a terrible thing to think about, but it may be what happened. And that's why you shouldn't be shooting practice rounds, real rounds, on a set before shooting. Before filming, I stopped saying shooting, I guess.
Right. Bad nomenclature.
And in any case, do you both think that even if you are, when you're filming and you're shooting, you don't really aim at people, right? I mean, the camera doesn't know if you're aiming really at a person's body or not. I mean, I was taught when I was a theater actress and there was a live, there was a real gun used in a play. You never really aim at the other person.
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, to a T, that's when I've trained actors to work on set with firearms. I have expressly told them if somebody asks you to aim that at somebody or something in the scene, you just don't. And if you have an issue with that, you stop filming. You bring it up as a safety concern. Now, there are instances where you would shoot at, say, down the barrel of the camera. If you need an effect shot or something interesting, but you put the plexiglass barriers in place. You're never aiming it at the cinematographer or the camera operator or the focus puller. You just teach actors that you just never point the weapon at anything you don't intend to shoot. And so if it's an intentional shot for visual effects or special effects or stunts, it is only ever aimed at inanimate objects. You would just no reason to aim at somebody. The camera doesn't know.
But
you
know, when you're doing a two shot, when you're looking over somebody's shoulder, they...
Well, in those instances, it's almost always we swap it out for the rubber gun.
Okay.
You know, it sounds like common sense, right? Mm-hmm. If you're gonna intentionally add danger into a shot, mitigate it. Operational risk management, right? So we don't need visual effects can put the flare in. Visual effects can put the casing being ejected. Why aim the gun, even if it's just blanks, at another performer? It's still fantasy.
And Jim, is this going to lead to criminal or civil action, do you think?
I think civil action is unquestioning. I mean, there's definitely going to be some lawsuit filed here. I mean, it's horrible. It's tragic. But yeah, we are a very litigious society. Criminal charges will be if they find that there is any intentional wrongdoing or any criminally negligent wrongdoing. So it is seriously possible. And just if this reporting is accurate today about people firing live rounds, real bullets on the crew beforehand, what would be super tragic is if one of those guns ended up in the prop section, or if they used prop guns to fire real rounds and then they put the guns back and one of them was still loaded.
It's incredible.
Or if they left the round of a dummy round, the projectile of a dummy round, if they left that in one of the barrels, you know, if somebody didn't check that, there's something really failed here. And it's just terrible. It's just terrible. Yeah,
absolutely.
It is terrible.
Yeah. This is not an accident that is impossible to prevent. This is one that, you know, it's always important. And, you know, hey, people sometimes are rushed. People are, their heads. There's been reporting that the armor in this case was very inexperienced and other armors turned it down because the budget was low and they didn't have enough money to do the proper job. And they gave it to somebody who had one prior credit to her name. And
even though her father was like a very, you know, famous armorer.
Yeah.
But John, isn't that the difference between people who are really knowledgeable about guns, but they're not necessarily knowledgeable at guns on a set?
Yeah. And let's bring up, I want to be clear about something else. If you're a licensed armorer within the film industry, that doesn't mean you have to be a weapons expert. There's no qualification that says you have to be an expert on the weapons you're using. Mm. I've known numerous armorers that inherited their company through nepotism from their family. I mean, institutional armorers, yet they understand the level of risk and they mitigate that risk by training or calling me and then I go out there and I train the armorers. There's ways this is mitigated. It's 100% avoidable. Where we get into problems is lower budget projects, people padding their credits or inventing whatever they need to say to get a job. And unfortunately, that's prevalent within some of these lower budget projects.
Well, you think that a movie that is all about a gunslinger, right?
Well, no. It's all about an accidental killing, right? With a gun.
Right. But it's this old, you know, the Wild West is going to be a lot of gunplay in it. You'd think that this would be a priority for the people who are hiring and vetting that department.
Beyond a doubt. You know, routinely I get called from my celebrity clients that are working on a project where they just want an extra layer of security. And I'll get called to go to a shoot just because they may have a question or there's some issue, or maybe they just don't feel comfortable. And I'm just an extra set of eyes. And I am very thorough when I look at weapons before they go to actors. And I think actors, at some point, there's a part, we should not hold them liable for what happens unless they're truly negligent. But an actor has so much on their plate to worry about in a show. I mean, they have everything in the world going through their head at the same time. They don't need to worry that the people responsible for set safety, the people responsible for their own safety, let them down. I just think it's appalling. Right.
Can we get back to, in that vein, actors, even if they're not intending to pull the trigger while they're aiming the gun at somebody, they will be crossing people all the time.
Yes. Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure.
In other words, pulling the gun out of a holster, they could come across several people, crew members and cameramen and so forth, camera operators and so forth. So you have to be very careful, even though you're not intending to pull the trigger. You could accidentally. And
of course you could.
One of the problems that law enforcement faces is that sometimes when you have your gun out, if you have your finger on the trigger, you can trip and you'll get this clutch response. And it's a grip response. And when you're falling, you try to grab for something. You could grab with one hand, but the hand that's holding the gun could also pull the trigger at the same time. So there's a lot of accidental firings of weapons in the real world that would, of course, be mirrored in the movie world and the TV world when people, especially when people are not used to handling guns, they're not experts in weapons, they're acting like they are.
That's right. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, I don't think audience people that watch our shows understand that just because two people are in a scene, there could be 80 people behind the camera as crew behind the fourth wall. There's always instances where actors are using weaponry that there's flagging issues and there's other issues. Of course, there's ways to mitigate that safely.
When you say flagging issues, I think you have to explain.
Please, sure, I don't know what that means.
Flagging is when you're aiming down the sights of a weapon and someone crosses your line of fire, right? So if the camera's over my shoulder and I'm aiming in on the suspect, let's say in the shot, and my sights are on that and the weapon's pointed at that person, I'm technically flagging them. Or someone inadvertently walks in front of my firing line, that's flagging.
So that happens all the time.
All the time, sure.
It's not possible, really, to ensure that the gun is never pointed at anybody.
Sure.
That's correct.
Because many times it's pointed in the direction of where the camera is, and there are camera operators and people who push the roll the camera on a dolly, and there are lighting people, and there are sound people. There's all sorts of people in grips and you know, producers who are behind the camera. And
sure.
And Video Village can be behind the camera even further. And these bullets can travel a tremendous distance, especially in a protected environment where there isn't trees and so forth that could protect people. In a studio, people get shot very easily.
They can. And I'd like to, that's a great point. And I'd also like to expand on that for just a second, is that, you know, each year we make hundreds, if not thousands, of shows and series and films that have weapons discharging blanks. Hundreds of thousands, not millions, of blanks are shot annually in this industry. And we have an extraordinarily small percentage of safety violations because armorers are better trained now than they were 20 years ago. Guys like me come out there as weapon experts, and we make sure there's an extra layer of security. ADs are trained better. I mean, even producers are trained better. Hell, on Criminal Minds, Simon Mirren, I used to take him shooting all the time. And, you know, he was a super anal about weapon safety. And at the end of the day, we're a smarter crew. We want to maintain a safe environment, and we mitigate that by enacting great safety protocols that make sure that's the case. And also, when I first got in the business, nobody was really training actors. Oh, the armor would take an actor out and give him 5 minutes on the gun. We call a fam fire, familiarization fire, where you take the weapon, you put a few blanks in it, and you shoot. And I think that's what happened on Rust. They didn't give a very thorough training session. And then that actor, you know, is then given the weapon and gone to set. And we're supposed to ensure that they're safe when they don't even know what safe really is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to the rest of us, you know, that are there to make sure we're maintaining a safe environment for that actor as well. I started teaching actors the basic fundamentals of weapon safety so that even if they saw something unsafe in a shot and nobody else caught it and they felt uncomfortable just for whatever reason, or they saw something in our training session that they remembered, that was just an extra layer of security.
Right. Absolutely. Jim, can you even imagine Terry Ham, our beloved AD on so many episodes of Criminal Minds ever doing what happened on this set?
No way. No, he would make sure that the armor transferred the weapon to the person who was going to be using that weapon and was there while he was there and got it back.
That's right. Well, anything else you guys want to say? And then I want to express our condolences to Helena Hutchins and her family. You know, Helena leaves behind a husband of 16 years and a young son. She was just breaking through in a craft that is so populated by male DPs. Yeah. Here she's an up-and-coming DP. She was named by the American Society of Cinematographers one of the rising stars in 2019. She told American Cinematographer magazine, "You need to develop your own vision, but the key to a successful film is communication with your director and your team." And this team just really let her down. And I'm so, so sorry.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking.
Thank you so much for jumping on. All roads lead to Criminal Minds. I had no idea when our friend Jorge Luis Tayo said, "Hey, you know, you should really talk to my friend John Barton." I had no idea that you even worked on Criminal Minds. And
I stay in the shadows. I hide behind to make sure everything's being taken care of. I don't need a spotlight.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for keeping Criminal Minds safe and all those other shows and movies you worked on. And hopefully people will understand the benefits of having that extra layer of security. I just hope they enact new rules and regulations that will prevent this from happening ever again.
I hope so. It's an honor. It's an honor to be a part of the machine.
All right, folks. Well, thank you for listening. And for now, this is Real Crime Profile signing off.
If you like deeper analysis like this episode on topics like Making a Murderer, Mindhunter, Escape at Dannemora,
the case of Sally Challen, the teacher's pet, Lynette Dawson, the Exonerated Five and When They See Us, and the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, you can listen to RCP on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever platform you listen to us on. And please be sure, if you like what we do, to give us a 5-star review.
Thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203-866-4107. Or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800-2000-247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214-946-4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org. And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800-799-7233.